This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker in an undisclosed location in the rural, wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. And my wrestling radio name is the Iron Hamster. And on the other end of the interwebs, who we got there?
Nikki Darling.
What's your wrestling name?
Oh, Freedom Master.
You said you didn't like that. I like that. You didn't like it because it was it wasn't an animal name. Well, it was from the movie, the TV show Bones. But
No.
Okay.
House.
Ahead. House, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. House is much better than Bones.
Bones is terrible.
Bones is... I don't know if Bones is terrible. It's just not.
It's terrible.
I don't know. There were a lot. I watched them all because there were a lot of episodes of them.
I don't want to be the master of anything either.
Well, I thought it was kind of a joke, Freedom Master, for a libertarian to use that name. I thought it was funny, kind of in the same way that I joke that we need libertarian reindoctrination camps, because that's forcing someone to go to anywhere is completely antithetical to liberty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to stick with that name for now, or do you want to come up with another one?
I'll come up with another one, but not right now. I can't do it off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. So, we want to talk about a bunch of things tonight. One is that are sort of freedom related, but you know, again, this is the show that, it's not all tyranny all the time. There's enough shows doing that out there, and we want to be a little bit different, not for the sake of being different, but to offer a variety of fun and feisty liberty media out there. And I think that there's enough people telling you what Obama did to you today and how he's going to steal your money and how we're all going to be in cages running on treadmills in about 4 years, which may or may not be true. All of that may or may not be true. But, you know, Obama definitely does want to steal your money and redistribute your wealth and take your guns and all that stuff. And I try to say that at least once a show. And I also try to say at least once a show that we believe in the non-aggression principle, which means do not commit theft, fraud, force, or aggression. And a lot of people say, I've never done those things. And, well, you have if you support the state, if you support people like Barack Obama and your local senators and your state senators and your mayor and your governor and your police and your soldiers and all of the other bureaucrats and enforcement arms of theft, fraud, force, theft, fraud, aggression and murder and all that bad stuff that all governments do all day long by definition. So look up the non-aggression principle if you want to know more about that. I don't usually do – we do ads. We take ads. We have paid ads. But almost never do live reads. But I do an unpaid live read about once a show for the non-aggression principle because it is the underlying concept of everything we do. And if we forget to mention it and explain it in detail, you should go look up the non-aggression principle. So, but we will try to tie that in. That is the overarching mood and mode of the Freedom Fiend show. So we want to talk about a movie called Idiocracy. It's a great movie. You seen it, Nikki?
Yeah, it's great. I've seen it like 10 times.
Yeah, and I'm going to give a little... There may be spoilers in this show when we talk about a movie, but this movie came out in 2006, and I really don't feel like there are spoilers of movies that old. I feel like, you know, not giving spoilers really should only account when movies are probably still in the theaters or, you know, in their first year, maybe at least, but at most. But I'll give you a thumbnail description of this movie that doesn't tell you any more than you'd see from the trailer. Basically, the premise is Luke Wilson plays this underachiever who he's in the U.S. Army. They decide to do this this experimentation in suspended animation, and they put him in a pod. He volunteers in the Army to be part of this experiment. They pick him because he's the most average person in America. He's average height, average weight, average intelligence, average looks, you know, nothing above or below the middle of the bell curve on anything in his life. And they put him into suspended animation for 500 years and actually forget about him. And then some natural event splits open the building and his pod falls out and he comes out of it and he's in the future, 500 years in the future. And 500 years in the future, after the dumbing down of America has had 500 more years to dumb down, he is the smartest person in America. And hilarity ensues. And I have called this movie a documentary. I mean, I have said, the basic premise of it at the beginning, too, is that it used to be that the smartest and most powerful survived, and that modern society and nanny statism, they don't use that word, but they show it pretty clearly, that nanny statism has allowed man to have not only no natural enemies, but actually no incentive to be spectacular. So the people that survive are actually the ones that just have the most kids, which is often not the smartest one. There's a couple, and they're contrasting two couples in the beginning. Do you remember that part, Nikki?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like one couple have, you know, genius IQs, and they're talking about not wanting to have – they want to have kids, but they don't want to have them yet because the market – with the market like it is, we could never have kids. And then they show this other couple who are kind of redneck, and it's kind of a poke at rednecks. But, you know, everybody knows someone who the redneck guy in this reminds him of. You know, he's got about six kids from his wife, and he's also dating the woman next door, and he's got one or two kids from them. And, you know, his son has a kid by the time he's 15, and it goes on and on and on until everybody on the earth is pretty stupid. You came across an article. You sent me an article, Nikki, from it's Paleo Future section of Gizmodo.com. You know, Gizmodo.com is actually the site where the term that I love to use, that people think the fiends made up, but we didn't, was coined, was by a writer on Gizmodo who coined the term chromed robot turds. And he actually got fired for it. Gizmodo is a site that reviews technology and science and generally things you can put in your pocket, like little computers, little cell phones, little smartphones, little GPS units, like fun devices that nerds with a bunch of money like to buy. And he called all of those chromed robot turds. He loved chromed robot turds. He reviewed them for a living. He had a lot of them, but he called it that kind of jokingly, but kind of disparagingly, making fun of people's addiction to them. And he got fired for calling them chromed robot turds. And we picked up the mantle after he left the room. And that's what we call the little phones that people love to listen to the Freedom Fiends on. So in the Paleo Future section of Gizmodo, there's this article called Idiocracy is a Cruel Movie and You Should Be Ashamed for Liking It. We're going to disagree with that, but first, you want to read a little bit of this, Nikki? A couple of paragraphs?
Sure. I'll start down at towards the middle. It says, what's so wrong with this thinking? Unlike other films that satirize the media and the soul-crushing consequences of sensationalized entertainment, my personal favorite being 1951's Ace in the Hole, Idiocracy lays the blame at the feet of an undeserved target, the poor, while implicitly advocating a terrible solution, eugenics. The movie's underlying premise is a fundamentally dangerous and backwards way to understand the world. And I want to throw in there is no advocating of eugenics in this
movie. Yeah. It's, you know, I think the writer of this article came to that conclusion, him or herself,
without researching eugenics.
Matt Novak. Well, I think Matt understands what eugenics are, but I don't think like you said, there's nothing in this movie that says there must be a solution, and the solution is eugenics. I don't even think that this movie says there must be a solution. I think it's kind of an impartial bystander, but I kind of get the feeling, I mean, this might be me painting it with my own feelings, but I kind of get the feeling that the maker of the movie, who is Matt Judge, or what's his name, the guy that does King of the Hill?
Yeah, Matt Judge.
Yeah, Matt Judge. I kind of get his feeling is like, there's nothing we can do to stop this.
Yeah, well, I think the couple in the beginning, they're advocating for personal responsibility.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Eugenics were forced.
It's Mike Judge. Mike Judge.
Oh. Sorry. Yeah. Well,
eugenics were generally forced, but actually some eugenic non-forced things, they're kind of policy. I guess they're forced. Planned Parenthood was started by someone who was a big fan of eugenics. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. And, you know, take out the fact that they do get some government money. I mean, they're basically a private organization. I will not bash them, because without them, there'd probably be a few more unwanted kids in the world, because I actually got a vasectomy there in the year 1999.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
But I don't think people should have to, you know, support them if they don't want. I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, of course. Definitely. I'll go on to read this. It says, the origin story for Idiocracy's future world of half-wits is that uneducated people in the early 2000s are having kids and smart people don't reproduce enough. It's clear from the film that the intelligent people are wealthy while the uneducated people are poor. So we're starting from a position of believing that wealthy people are inherently more intelligent and by extension deserve their wealth. This link between intelligence and wealth is perhaps the most dangerous idea of the film and pretty quickly slips into advocating for some form of soft eugenics to build a better world.
Again, wow. I go back to, I don't think that the film is saying there is a solution. It kind of feels like we're doomed. This is going to happen no matter what. But I am really disturbed by this writer's assertion that there's something wrong with making a correlation between intelligence and wealth.
Exactly. Yeah, I think he has a little bit of wealth envy, too.
I kind of think, you know, if I want to use his same brush, I think he would be advocating for eugenics or at least some kind of soft eugenics if he thinks, I mean, it sounds like he thinks it's a problem that smart people have more money. So it sounds like he wants to redistribute the wealth. So let's say that's already done. You've redistributed the smart people are now working and making the same $12 an hour minimum wage that the stupid people are making. What do you do about people having babies? It sounds like you'd have to sustain that model.
Yeah.
It sounds like you'd have to limit, you know, have some kind of one child per couple policy or something.
Yeah, but that'll never happen, and I think it should. But okay.
I like the lady in Oakland that was paying crackheads to get fixed.
Yeah, we talked about that. I was just thinking about that because obviously that's a choice you make. And
now, is that eugenics? I mean, we're talking like we're absolutely anti-eugenics. That kind of sounds like eugenics, but it's free market eugenics.
Yep.
It's free market, which makes it not eugenics. We'll be back with more about why we're right and the rest of the world is wrong on the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the free market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
It's Michael Bean, the Freedom Fiends, and that music you're listening to there, I composed that. It's a little toe-tapping number by my one-man band, Right Arm of Wyoming, and the tune is called Would You Tar and Feather a Tax Collector? And it's not a call to action, it's just a question. So we're talking about the movie Idiocracy, the documentary from the future that somebody at Gizmodo.com has said, it is a cruel movie and you should be ashamed for liking it. And we are shaming the person who wrote this article, Matt Novick. Read a little more of this article now. He does use the word crap in this, and that's a word we don't generally say on the air. You're allowed to say it on the air. It's not an FCC violation. But, you know, we try to be respectful to the sensitive ears, the virgin ears of some of our listeners. And so we don't usually say crap. I said it twice. But we're going to say it because it's in context in this article, and it's too puss-puss-like of a cuss word for us to soften it beyond crap. Okay, that's three times. All right, go ahead.
Okay. If only we could get rid of the uneducated Americans, example, redneck poors, and we'll have the opportunity to live in a utopia.
Hang on a sec. This is coming in really out of context. Let me give it some context. This is the writer of this movie making false assumptions about what the creators of this movie thought, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so go ahead.
He's being kind of snarky.
Snark.
If only we could get rid of the uneducated Americans, the redneck poors, and we'll have the opportunity to live in a utopian world filled with smart and civilized people. Of course, everyone here in 2014 making a reference to Idiocracy as a pseudo-documentary identifies with a soon-to-be-extinct intelligent class. They believe it's the others, the dumb, impoverished people that are ruining America with their binging on crap TV and crap internet and crap food. Which, yeah. I don't...
It's kind of interesting, too, because I totally get the feeling that the guy writing this is a lefty statist and that he is definitely a intellectual. You know, he thinks he's smarter than people, especially since he writes for a magazine that gives glowing reviews to the latest Chrome robot turd and the Angry Worms games that you can download to put on them. But... It's interesting that he's defending rednecks because these are the same people, and I'm going to collectivize the collectivists here for a minute. These are the same people, these left coast, right coast, liberal, gizmo lovers who constantly make fun of rednecks, like basically to the point of, as Jim Goad pointed out in the book, The Redneck Manifesto, white rural, you know, not college educated Americans are pretty much the only racial group you can make fun of anymore on TV.
Yeah.
Like if you said the things you can get away with joking about them on TV, and you said that same thing about, you know, lesbians, blacks, Asians, gays, Muslims, Obama lovers, any other group of people, you would be boycotted and thrown off the air.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
So he's defending the poor ill-educated pleat-eye, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think, just using it for a story. But, all right, I'll continue reading. It says, we hear it every day. BuzzFeed listicles, cute animal slideshows, and reality TV are destroying America. But in some form or another, they
what?
Have been, or at least that's what we've told ourselves. They always, in one form or another, they always have been. Reality TV shows.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what we've told ourselves. We romanticize the past and think that everybody used to sit around spending their leisure time reading dense literature and debating philosophy or something. But guess what? We've always seen ourselves as vapid and terrible.
I was paraphrasing an article, I think you and I read it before, called I Hate Your Politics by John Scalzi, and it goes through conservatives, yeah. Liberals, and libertarians, and he says this of liberals. Liberals champion the poor and weak, but do it in such condescendingly bureaucratic ways that the ill-educated cleat-i would rather eat their own shotguns than associate with the likes of them. Famously humorless and dour, probably because for a really good liberal, everything is political, and you just can't joke about things like that.
Yep, exactly.
So.
All right.
I give, I wouldn't give Idiocracy 10 thumbs up, you know, out of 10.
Mm-mm.
I would give it, I would actually give the first 3 minutes of it like 20 out of 10. That beginning that explains how they got to where they are in the current state is amazing. And then the rest of the movie just kind of looks like a not horrible Saturday Night Live skit extended into a movie, you know, not from the original cast with all the good actors that are all dead now.
Pretty hilarious.
We'll be back on Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Squisgar Squigelps from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
It's Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends talking to Nikki Darling. And we, Worms, we are going to take phone calls tonight. Well, we're going to take Skype calls from people we know. If you've added your name on the Freedom Fiend Skype, you can call in and talk for a short period of time. And I'm looking at this article that Nikki sent me. It's called The Five Stages of Becoming an Anarchist. It's pretty funny. It's in the Washington Times Communities, which you say is, what is that?
I believe it's independent bloggers who get to post under the name The Washington Times, but they don't really get paid by the Times. They just get paid per click, I believe.
Yeah. You know, before my wife met me, she went on a date with – she told me about some of the losers that she went on dates through some dating site. And one of them, like, she didn't even go on a date with him because he said on the phone that that he was – he wrote reviews for IMDb and Amazon. Which is like anyone can do and you don't get paid.
Yeah, yeah. That's hilarious.
So I'm looking at this article. There's two articles we're going to discuss by Joseph S. Dietrich, who I don't know, but he looks like the president of the Young Republicans Club. He's got short hair and a tie, and his collar's kind of loose here. Like, hey, girls, I can loosen my tie and have a good time. I'm not going to berate this guy. I don't know. You know, he might be a great guy, but it's interesting that things get forwarded around a lot these days that are presented as being the final word on libertarianism. And, you know, this is a community-generated blog. Anybody can write on it, but it's been going around the Twitters. But even in mainstream magazine, like, there are people, writing as experts on liberty. And then they'll – like, for instance, this guy recommends on a different page – the five best libertarian blogs, and he says they are Hit and Run from Reason magazine.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good, but it's kind of Beltway libertarian.
Yep.
You know,
totally.
Kind of like work within the system, and you know, yeah. And then there's the Libertarian Standard, which I've heard of, and then there's like three that I've never heard of: Circle Bastiat, the Laissez-Faire Club blog, and The Beacon. I've never heard of any of those. Have you?
Me neither. Nope.
Yeah. I mean, I would – libertarian blogs. I mean, everybody's doing videos and podcasting these days, or I can't even – I don't even look at libertarian blogs much. But I guess I would have to say Strike the Root is a really good one that comes to mind for me. The Freedom Fiends blog, but
yeah.
I'm not going to say that should have been on there, because it's – it's a, it's not as well known, but I definitely would have put, Strike the Root, which is a really good blog that Paul Bonneau writes for. He's one of my favorite liberty writers.
Okay.
So I'm looking at his picture, and the picture that – I don't know if you use your own pictures here or if your editor, if they have an editor on something like this, but – there's a picture of a Guy Fawkes mask hanging on a wall in a Halloween costume store, so it makes it look like one of the five stages of becoming an anarchist is buying a Guy Fawkes mask. And
yeah,
I don't want any government, but I don't own any Guy Fawkes masks. That's money I could spend on ammo and microphones. So why don't you read a little bit of this article, and I'll interrupt you and we'll comment.
Okay, it says, Madison, Wisconsin, maybe you're a libertarian, but an anarchist. No way. Someday, however, you might be. And then in little, smaller letters, it says, on the path to anarchism, there are five stages, and unlike conventional applications of the Kubler-Ross model, which is the five stages of grief, the end result is not death or loss, but life and freedom.
How did you know that that's the five stages of grief? I knew that, but I would not expect a lot of people to know that that's called the Kubler-Ross model.
Just studying psychology.
And is it five stages? I thought it was seven
I thought it was five.
We'll get our crackhead research team on that. Yeah, it's five.
Yeah, right. Maybe they updated it. Who knows? They're always updating that psychobabble. They're
updating it to add one of them being liking liberty. No, okay. The five stages of grief are known as, in order, they're denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance of dealing with loss. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. So we'll start with number five, the denial.
Oh, he uses the same for this and then explains them differently. Okay.
Which that is very clever.
Yeah. It's it makes sense from a young man who would loosen his tie for this picture.
Yeah.
While looking like the head of the Young Republicans Club.
He could be pretty cool. He's probably a DC guy. So number five, denial.
I'll go find him on Facebook and tell him we're talking about him and he should tune in.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, because the Beltway Libertarians use their real names on Facebook.
Yeah.
All right. So, five, denial.
Oh, he's not going to want to talk to us. He's sorry. What? You're laughing because I interrupted you again?
It's like the third time.
Yeah. The five stages of interrupting Nikki Darling. Oh, he's got an interview with him and Jeffrey Tucker debating. So, like, he's not going to want to talk to us, man.
No.
He's talking to real, like, bow tie libertarians and stuff. Yeah. Bow tie celebritarians. All right, go on.
Five, denial. To you, anarchism is silly, unattainable, and impossible. It should be dismissed. On the other hand, your abstruse ideal of limited government should be upheld and relentlessly pursued. You may or may not think the phenomenon of market
phenomenon.
Of market value is real. An anarchist friend of yours gives you a copy of Murray Rothbard's For a New Liberty, proudly donning your faux Che Reagan Revolution t-shirt. You assert, I've learned everything I need to know from Ayn Rand and Milton Friedman. Thank you very much.
Hmm.
Interesting. Okay, so number four, anger. Why are those pesky anarchists undermining the libertarian movement? Just when respectable liberty-minded politicians begin to influence their colleagues, some renegade anarchist sullies the gains. And as soon as the libertarianism earns an iota of respect from the general public, anarchists remind everyone just how crazy freedom is.
That's a common complaint I've heard. And I've also heard, well, I've heard politicians calling people whose politics they don't agree with, anarchist for a long time. I mean, I'm sure it happened before the 60s, but there is a pretty famous clip of LBJ criticizing other Democrats, the Democrats who wanted blacks to be able to vote, and the young people. I guess the yippies weren't really of a political party. They were pretty much communist, but they were not really anarchist, even in the left sense. They wanted a communist government. But he said something like, you know, I hope these anarchists have their fun because in November it's going to be all over for them. Yeah. But I've definitely, I mean, I've heard there was a sitting U.S. senator, I can't remember his name, who called the Tea Party anarchists and freedom fiends. He said fiends with a D. But obviously influenced by the name of our show, it dribbled down to him somehow.
Well, it's unfortunate that anarchy has such a bad name already that I don't even want to call myself an anarchist. Like, there are movies now, like that movie The Purge.
Oh, yeah.
Anarchy Day or whatever it is.
I think that's a concerted effort of somebody in power to criticize either a concerted effort of someone. The premise of the movie is basically it's a sequel of a movie where basically the U.S. government causes a bunch of murder by saying one day a year there will be no laws. And it's not really so much in my mind that there aren't police out there protecting people. It's that people are naturally inclined to not murder each other, but the government is telling them they can for one day a year.
Yeah.
And, it's not really anarchy. That's chaos, which is synonymous with a lot of people to anarchy. But I'm just amazed how there are so many people who consider themselves small government Republicans or small government people who actually argue with other small government people of I'm more small government with you, but then are appalled by the idea of no government and people actually, taking care of themselves.
Yeah, well, a lot of people they know probably would be out of a job. So.
Yep.
All right, so I'll go to number four. It's anger. Why are these pesky anarchists under... Oh, did I read this already? Okay, wait, I got to go down. If confronted by a particularly persistent anarchist, you quote F.A. Hayek, assuming that will shut the anti-stater up. Probably nothing, in quotes, probably nothing has done so much harm to the liberal libertarian cause as the wooden insistence of some on certain rules of thumb above all the principles of laissez-faire.
By the way, I think that this author is an anarchist. He's okay. I'm looking at his Facebook, and he's a big fan of Liberty.me, which is a peaceful, happy, fluffy, intellectual anarchist dating site or, you know, social network run by Jeffrey Tucker, who's an anarchist.
Have you joined yet?
Costs money. I'm not going to join.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd join even if it was free, and I'm not denigrating it. It sounds like a great idea, and I wish it all the luck in the world, but... I have no time for the social networks that exist. I don't have time for another one.
Yeah, I think my boyfriend's going to join.
I'd rather build my own sites than pay to build someone else's.
Yeah. Okay, so it goes on to say, besides, even if private roads were indeed possible, surely the government is necessary to provide for the national defense. The Constitution says so, after all.
Actually, there is something about roads in the Constitution.
Really?
Yep. Postal roads. Yep. It's got to do with the building of the post office system, which is in the Constitution.
My most unfavorite place. Okay. Number three is bargaining. All right. All right. Maybe the anarchists make some solid points. You're willing to concede that still, though, we live in a world of reality. Your hero, Ludwig von Mises, knew that. For that reason, he rejected statelessness, nothing that, in quotes, anarchism misunderstands the real nature of man. It would be practical only in a world of angels and saints. And that's something that I hear a lot of from people. But without the government, all the bad people would kill everybody.
Yeah. And my reaction to that is... maybe for the first couple days, and I think all the bad people would be dead.
Yeah, well, that's if people have the means to protect themselves, and as things are going, that's not going to be the case someday.
I was never a huge fan of Ludwig von Mises. I like him, and I've read him. And I do know that in some ways he talked about the unworkingness, the unpossibility of actual... anarchy and work. He was more of the economic end of it.
Yep, totally.
I don't know. You said during the break, what'd you say? I'm not a head libertarian. I'm a gut libertarian.
No, I'm not a book libertarian.
I'm a groin libertarian. I feel it in my groin. I have, I grow tumescent for liberty.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to take your money and spend it to keep you from hearing things like Freedom Fiends.
So y'all got to hear the debut just now of the new, kinder, gentler Freedom Fiends torrenting ad. We're getting complaints about it. And I was seeing how it could... I mean, it was disturbing people, like upsetting people, and... I don't really want to do that, at least not over and over and over. And one guy said that it disturbed him while drinking his coffee and relaxing in the morning. And so I made one that sounded like a coffee ad and used that morning song by Grieg, which is kind of a cliche for calm and mornings. So we got really bored reading this article, the five stages of becoming an anarchist by this bow tie or tie wearing anarchist. He's a good guy. We're just not his audience. And I don't want to talk about Ludwig von Mises. We decided in the break that we're going to talk about industrial, proto-industrial rock, like the band Skinny Puppy. And we're going to talk about Broken Girls. So go ahead. Skinny Puppy.
I saw Skinny Puppy at the 930 Club like 10 years ago with a really broken guy.
Now, was that when the 930 Club, was it 930 F Street? No, that was after it moved to WGSD Hall, right?
It was right by Howard University Hospital on Florida Avenue.
So, yeah. Did you ever go when it was on F Street?
No, I didn't. I was probably too young.
It was, I used to play there and hang out there constantly. It was at 930 F, as in Frank Street, in Washington, D.C., if you want to look that up. And that is literally the spot where Abraham Lincoln was shot. Like,
Either
there or, like, next door. Like, that's where the Ford Theater was on that spot. So, cool place for a rock club.
Yeah. Well, kind of by the FBI building.
Isn't everything in D.C. by an FBI building?
Probably. Some sort of agency.
Yeah, Broken Girls. Let's see. When my band Bomb, I lived in D.C., then I moved out to San Francisco, and I played in this band called Bomb, and Broken Girls were kind of my hobby at the time. And I remember we played at the 930 Club on tour in D.C., and this wasn't very broken, but it was kind of cool. We found there were two girls in the audience that came to see us who were twins, and they were, you know, probably 19. You know, it was an all ages. They served drinks, but they had two different wristbands, and it was all ages, or they X'd your hands.
Uh-huh.
And we gave these two girls Bomb shirts and had them stand on stage on either side of the drummer motionless for the whole show. They were identical twins. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Are there pictures of that?
No, there aren't.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
The 930 Club used to videotape all the bands. They had like some mounted cameras up on the ceiling, but they sold videotapes for like $80 or something, and we never bought any. So I wish. There is some video of that band, though. If you ever want to see it, I could find it for you.
Yeah, I definitely would love to.
Find it for the audience.
So you played in D.C. in the 80s, though, right? Not in the 90s?
Bomb was together from 86 to 93. And
okay.
I lived in D.C. in like 82, 83. Or, you know, I lived in D.C. for like 8 months. Over that winter, and used to go to the 930 Club a lot. And then I moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, and played in a band called Baby Opaque that played. We never played the 930 Club, but we played outdoors in a park at something somebody from Discord Records put up. It was some protest for something the government did. I don't even remember. We played in Norfolk. We played in Charlottesville a lot. We played in Richmond. We played in Richmond with Death Piggy, Dave Brocky's old band, and before Gwar, and in the middle of the set, they did Gwar as an intermission. Gwar was like a skit that Death Piggy used to do before the guitarist in Death Piggy went to jail for stabbing his girlfriend.
Wow.
And then, then they became Gwar full time. And we played with Gwar a few times. We played with them once in Raleigh, North Carolina. With Gwar, with Bomb. And there were, when Gwar played, there were more people on stage than there were in the audience. That was how early on in Gwar it was. So we're going to talk more about rock and roll and Broken Girls when we get back on the Freedom Fiends. This is so much more fun than talking about Ludwig von Mises.
Totally.
And what Republicans and Democrats think of people who don't want any government.
Boo.
Boo. Okay, you think of a broken guy story, and I'll think of a couple dozen broken girl stories, and we'll be back.
Okay.
I think I'd win that competition.
Actually. Oh, yes, totally.
I was in a hot band. It's hard not to, you know, in the 80s. Yeah. People wonder why I just am content hanging out with my wonderful wife in my house and not leaving. Because I've done all that, man.
Yep.
I've had enough for 10 lifetimes. And lived to tell the tale. Worms.
Annelids.
As Bill Buford says.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Themes tickling your cerebellum and your cerebral cortex. Look at this other article on Gizmodo. The 1920s tabloid reporter who predicted TV could kill newspapers. And we've talked a lot on this show about people who were entrenched in a particular system at one time or another and didn't want things to change, like the buggy whip makers who tried to outlaw cars, or the farmer politician congressman in the early 1900s who wanted to limit cars' speed limits to the speed people could walk and called cars devil machines, all the way up to people today who say, without the government, who would build the roads? Let me do it in my, like, 1920s reporter voice. Well, without the government, who would build the roads?
That's really good.
Thanks. But there's a quote in here named from someone named Salias Bent. Amazing name. Salias Bent. A man who in the 1920s was there to tell you that newspapers weren't going anywhere. Sure, the newspapers of 20 years hence, that distant decade known as the 1940s, was going to be different. But the newspaper itself was not going extinct. Bent insisted that journalism would simply be split into two camps. The sensationalized tabloid designed to, quote, thrill the mentally deficient, unquote, and the serious journalistic endeavor, quote, still capable of illuminating the world, unquote. And I am here to argue that the Freedom Fiends are both. Why can't we have both? The Freedom Fiends are capable of illuminating the world, and we do it often. And sometimes we just want to thrill the mentally deficient. And that's what we're going to do in this segment. Thrill the mentally deficient, or at least the mentally deficient part of intelligent people's brains. So we're talking about this band, Skinny Puppy, which is a proto-industrial rock band from the early 80s. This is, you know, most people think of Nine Inch Nails as... No, the best and first, industrial band. And it's like,
nope.
Trent Reznor was probably at one point 14, living in his parents' basement in Ohio, playing air guitar to Devo Records and then listening to Skinny Puppy. I mean, this is way before that kind of stuff. So tell me your Skinny Puppy dude story.
Oh, I was just taken to the concert. I had never really heard of them before, but I was dating a guy at the time who looked like your average guy, wore collared shirts to work, had a good job, lived in an apartment in the city, that sort of thing. But he definitely had this dark side, and he liked goth music, and he really liked the goth culture a lot. And he loved reptiles. He had like over 100 reptiles. In a two-bedroom apartment?
That's, I don't know. Somebody could do an article called, Your Boyfriend Might Be a Serial Killer If... And that It probably wouldn't make you a serial killer, but it could probably be on that list.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, when I first met him, he only had like 5, and then he developed this weird habit, which should have been a red flag to me, but it wasn't because I was young and dumb. But he definitely had like, you know, he liked drinking a lot, and that's probably what ruined our relationship in the end. That and cheating.
While drunk. Him.
Him. Okay. Definitely.
Cheating while drunk. That's the charge. Yeah. Is there any other kind of cheating?
No. Well, yeah, there is, but you know, the cheating while drunk, people usually say that that's the excuse. They cheated because they were drunk, and I don't believe that.
Yeah, back when I was dating different girls in sequential monogamy, I sort of didn't cheat. I would cheat, and then I'd come home and tell the girl about it and tell her I was going to do it again.
Well, okay, sure. If she was okay with it, then why not?
Well, she wasn't okay with it. They weren't okay with it, but, you know.
They kept coming back?
Yeah. And the girl that turned me on to Skinny Puppy was this beautiful girl from, she was 24. I was about 25, 26. Met her when my band Bomb played in Knoxville, and she followed me back like a skinny puppy to San Francisco and lived with my girlfriend and I. And when we finally kicked her out, she ended up in Golden Gate Park turning tricks for McDonald's meals.
Woo!
That's pretty broken.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And there's redemption in the third act of this story. Don't worry, we'll get there. So tell me about your skinny puppy boy.
I don't know. He seemed to have set the standard for boyfriends because he was like my first major. Well, actually, my first real boyfriend. I didn't realize. Well, he was Muslim, but I didn't realize how bad that was going to be for our relationship at the time, to the point where he wouldn't let me into his family's home and he'd like stash me in his frat house.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but the next guy was a skinny puppy guy, and I believe he definitely did. He like set this weird universal standard for me because I just cannot shake these kind of guys. Or I couldn't shake these kind of guys. So it's kind of unfortunate, but, just because I like gothy music and weird artsy stuff and went to art school doesn't mean I'm broken.
You know, there's some politician that tried to outlaw goth dress. Did you know that?
No, that's ridiculous. Well, they're trying to outlaw saggy pants now, so it's probably not that ridiculous.
Oh, Russia has also raged a war on emo kids. But yeah, there was somebody in America that did that. Let me find out who it was. So what?
Oh, man. Regulating how people can dress. Just so ridiculous.
Yeah,
because if you're going to do that, then get rid of suits, too, because they cost like somebody their entire paycheck just to get a suit.
Well, when Jello Biafra ran for mayor of San Francisco against Dianne Feinstein, one of his platforms was that businessmen would have to wear clown suits between 9 and 5 during the week.
That's great.
Yeah.
I like the idea of them wearing their sponsors on their shirt, too, like patches like a NASCAR racers.
Yeah, Halliburton.
Mm-hmm.
Halliburton. Did you figure out? No, I couldn't find him in.
Yeah, sometimes you can't find stuff on the internet.
You're just going to have to take my word for it, people.
Well, so let me ask you, wise Mr. Michael Dean, do you believe that women who continually end up with the same sort of guy with the alcohol problem or whatever, do you think that it's because of something in their life?
Daddy issues?
Yeah. Do you think
daddy issues is the easy answer. I mean, to take it even broader than just women choosing bad mates, I would say I'm a really firm believer in that saying that insanity is doing the same things over and over and expecting different results.
Yeah, but see, my problem is, and this has happened every time, is that for the first few months after I've met them, they don't drink anything at all. And then, like, month 3, they're just slamming alcohol, just slamming it. And I just didn't see it coming.
Are you implying that you're making them drink?
No, but I've been told that.
By them?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Just another excuse.
Well, alcoholics blame everything on everyone except themselves. But
exactly.
Are they people who I mean, when you meet them, do they claim to be on the wagon, or do they are they hiding their drinking, or?
No, I guess they're hiding their drinking because it never really comes up. And I mean, a few of the guys, we might have gone out and had a drink, but it was nothing excessive. And then 3 months later, it's like, wow, you're drinking as much as a frat house could. I never saw this coming. So that's just my that seems to be my thing. They just, you know, hide it because they probably know that it's going to turn me off.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean, when you meet people, is it usually a prearranged date or you meet them out while socializing or how do you meet them?
Prearranged dates usually, you know, okay, or so, meeting through friends.
So they're on their best behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm kind of at a loss for dating advice.
That's fine.
My wife is not an alcoholic, never had any alcohol abuse problems, never had any substance abuse problems. Her first husband was a drunk and she left him and he died of liver failure years later. So, she was into the idea that I was sober when I met her. And
yeah, totally.
When somebody is in recovery, it's a lot harder to be hiding. You know, I would almost say look for guys in recovery, although they come with their own special set of symptoms.
Yeah, because I mean, I've just always thought, well, from my research, that alcoholics generally are selfish people and that they never lose that, really.
Well,
not to say you're selfish.
That's one of the I am motivated by things that help me. I do a lot of what I would consider charity, at least with my time, of helping people with like technical issues, but I definitely get a feeling of satisfaction out of it too. And I guess I like to be thought of as the nice guy who does that kind of stuff. I'm very self-motivated, but I wouldn't say I'm selfish. Although nobody who's selfish says they're selfish, especially if they're sociopathic, which I'm not. Or alcoholic, which I am, but I'm 20 years sober. Recovery, 12-step programs deal a lot with getting over the problems that made you drink to begin with.
Exactly, yeah.
I guess that's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe you need an Al-Anon meeting.
No.
I mean, not necessarily for, you know, anybody currently in your life. I'm talking about, like, the first time I was introduced to Al-Anon is by a woman I was dating who was going because of her father, and her father was dead, and she was still going.
Oh, okay.
Because someone's out of your life doesn't mean that your propensity for being attracted to broken people is gone.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been told by friends that I'm a very empathetic person, and therefore people prey on that sort of thing because they're broken and they need someone to care a lot about them. So
yeah, because alcoholics aren't really capable of they're often not capable of supporting themselves, but even when they are capable of supporting themselves financially, they still have a lot of issues that need a lot of mommying, I guess I'd say. And a woman who wants to fix people, it's a sympathetic relationship or a what's the thing with it's mutually parasitic? What's the word for that?
I don't know.
You know, like the birds that eat the ticks off the rhino, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like a barnacle on a boat.
Yeah, symbiotic. Yeah. The guy wants to be the barnacle on your boat. That's what I'm getting at.
Oi.
We'll be back with more.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Freedom Fiends. And on this edition of Sally, Jesse, Raphael, we're talking about men who love themselves too much and the women who love them. We're talking to Nikki Darling about her string of bad relationships, a lifetime, a litany of bad relationships, and trying to get some... We're trying to fix her on the air live. She's the hamster on the table in the teaching hospital. So tell me a little more.
Oh goodness. Well, I have my parents are both still married. Been 35 years. They're stable. My dad doesn't have a drinking problem. My mom doesn't either. So one cannot surmise that I had a terrible upbringing.
You were adopted though.
I was adopted.
How
yes,
old were you when you were adopted?
I was seven. I was in foster care for 2 years, and before mom.
The foster care for 2 years could have something to do with it. Say that people form a lot of what they are by age seven.
Okay. Well, the foster parents I had were great people. They were a little Christian, a little overly Christian. What am I looking for? They were religiously motivated in everything they did. And so that... did rub off on me a little bit. But other than that, they were really kind people.
And you were with your parents, your birth parents, up to age five?
With my birth mother, yes.
And where was your father?
I believe he was in prison.
I'm not going to laugh. I guess I will because you laughed. I'm kind of like, bingo, okay.
But that might
have something to do with all this.
I don't remember him. Like, he wasn't in my life, so...
Yeah, but you knew that your dad wasn't there. He was absent in your formative years of 0 through 5, and, you know, you learned later that he was in prison, so maybe you liked the bad boys.
I really don't, though. I really don't. Don't like them at all.
Well, I don't mean bad boys like criminal. I mean bad boys like they don't, you know, they're not good men. They're not good, good mates. They're not what you're looking for.
That must be a subconscious thing because I'm very picky about the men that I date, and none of them seemed to be like that in the beginning.
The beginning, yeah. And you know, I'm really into that you're willing to talk about this openly on the air. I think it's a good conversation. I think it can be helpful to people that may have similar issues or, you know, any issue. I'm not going to try to psychoanalyze you. This is not the Stefan Molyneux show.
Nope.
I think it's kind of cliche that I went instantly to maybe you had a bad childhood, but you did. You know, Stefan Molyneux would say you had a bad childhood if, you know, oh, I don't know. He says everyone had a bad childhood, but it sounds like from a technical description, you had a substandard childhood. You know, your dad was in prison. We haven't even asked about your mother yet, and you were in a foster home, and then you were adopted by loving parents at seven. But
yes,
I'm not surprised that you seek men who end up not being good for you because you didn't have a father figure around early on.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, that must be deep in there because I don't even go to places where these men would hang out at.
People who know you think they know what you want and set you up with them.
That's true, but usually all the men I've dated have had jobs, you know, decent jobs. They've all been working. They have relationships with their families. I mean, that's one thing I look for. A guy who says that, you know, he has been disowned by his whole family or something, that's a major red flag right there, so...
I'm also not going to try to wrap this up and solve your problem and say, I know your problem in the last 5 minutes of this. I'm not qualified to do that. I think it's even when people who are qualified, quote unquote, to do that, I don't think it can be done in a 2-hour radio show that, you know, you talk about politics for the first hour of, especially. And I think it's just good to kind of talk, because there probably are people out there listening who feel there's something wrong and can't really put a finger on it. Even if they don't have the same story that you had, there might be something that resonates with them. So I think it's helpful. I do.
Yeah. And I can say, up until my current boyfriend, I had never dated anybody with a sort of liberty perspective in life. So I think that's why my current relationship is going so well, because him and I share the same principles, which is fantastic. Yeah, actually, on our first date, he says to me, he goes, "I love the School Sucks podcast." And I was like, "Oh, yay."
Yeah. Were you, how many boyfriends before that did you discover liberty?
Like 4.
Okay. We'll be back. Yeah. I couldn't put up with that. We'll be back. We will be back. I'll tell the story of my sister's wedding ring when we get back.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Yeah, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and we're gonna enjoy a little Paul Simon here from the 70s. All right.
Inside your head, she said to me, the answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. She said it's really.
Yeah, okay, that's too, like, lobotomized for me to really listen to very much of it. But that was a very popular song back in the day. And it was really strange, because that was a hit, like, when my parents were getting divorced. And it would really depress my dad when he'd hear it. Yeah, so we're talking about bad relationships and the women who love them. You know, they say it takes 2 to tango. So you have conceded to your innermost self that it's possible that you had something to do with picking these men, right? It's not a random act that happened to you.
No. Yeah, you're right. But it must be something deep inside me, because I never go out seeking these people consciously.
You know, it might be more of a situation, you know, less than that you look for them, and more that you don't recognize when it's happening until it's too late, and previously haven't left them easy enough.
Yep. Yeah, you're probably right about that. But I feel like I've learned a lot from it and changed a lot of things.
Yeah. I had a lot of history with damaged women, and I say that, I guess I used to wear that like a badge of pride or something, but I don't know, because I guess people have this impression, and I had this impression of, you know, crazy girls are great in the sack would be a crude way to say it, but, you know, a more true way of saying it would be just, you know, people who are nuts are kind of uninhibited and they're a lot of fun until they try to stab you in your sleep.
Yeah, well, why do you think that you picked those kind of women?
I don't think I picked women. I think they picked me, and I said yes.
Okay. Yeah, and you probably weren't into relationships being in a band, I take it.
It's kind of weird and hard to say, because I was into, at various points in my life until I got married, I was into either sequential monogamy, which was a lot of my life, which is where you date somebody, it's serious from, like, you know, you move in on the first date, basically, kind of thing, or, you know, shortly thereafter. And then you're with each other constantly until it implodes, and then you really quickly get into another relationship that's monogamous.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Then there have been other periods when I was in a band, especially, where I was dating a handful of women at the same time. They all knew about each other. But it was more than just sleeping with them. It was like actually trying to have five girlfriends or seven girlfriends at once. And that is not seven times the fun. It's seven times the hassle. And one of them always feels like killing you.
Yeah. Would you consider that polyamory?
I don't think I'd ever even heard that term then. But yeah, I know that there's a lot of people into liberty who are into polyamory.
Yep.
But I don't know. I never want to discuss it with them. They seem boring to me. I don't know. That was one of the things in that John Scalzi, I hate your politics no matter what, was that libertarians are into polyamory and hope you are too, but they're kind of out of shape, which takes some of the fun out of it. Yeah. When my wife and I were first together, and probably a little after we got married, we, let's just say, together sampled some fruit on the side together of a couple different ladies. But I don't know. I kind of got that out of my system, I think. And I'm real happy with her. And put it this way, like, if the authorities came to either of us and said, like, something happened to the other one and we think they were having an affair, like, the affair part of it, like, would not compute. Like, neither of us would believe that, because we're I think everyone who's ever been cheated on probably believes that their spouse wouldn't cheat on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I am positive she would not, and I would not cheat on her.
Oh, yeah, DJ's so great.
She is. She's really my best friend. I mean, literally, like, yeah. When she comes home from work, every time I'm excited. I'm happy.
Aw.
Yeah.
That's so great.
And we do a lot of we don't go out and do a lot of things. We used to, but we don't so much anymore. And it's kind of more my choice than hers. Like, she would go out and do stuff, but she's, mm-hmm. but not as much as a lot of couples would want to. Like, she doesn't want to go dance or anything like that, but she might want to go to a museum once in a while. But, she just goes and sees her daughter every few times a year and, like, does the things, you know, that she wants to do outside the house with her daughter or with her parents. You know?
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. You guys seem to have a very balanced relationship. Which is great.
Yeah, we do. And I think part of it is that we got all the craziness out of ourselves before we met each other. Like, she had a practice marriage and I had a bunch of practice girlfriends. So,
yeah, exactly. But yeah. I've definitely heard one of the biggest red flags about somebody when dating is if they're way too into you in the beginning, like that whole, like, let's move in on the second date thing, that's supposed to definitely be like a red flag.
It could be a red flag, but it wasn't in the situation with my wife. We didn't move in, like, give up either of our homes for like 6 or 7 months, but she came to see me almost every night and I wanted her to, to the point where, you know, she had a toothbrush in my house and some clothes and things like that right away. You know, I mean, we met on a dating site. She came over, she spent the night and, took the next day off work because we were having too much fun.
Ah, okay. Well, let me ask you this. Was this a paid dating site or a free dating site?
Just like $10 a month or something.
Okay, because I've heard also that people who use the free dating sites have more problems, because if you're paying for it, then people are really invested.
Well, I think it's also like anybody who doesn't have $10 a month to spend on something like that probably is going to be financially a hassle.
Yeah, but I mean, also it's easier for men who want to, like, be the so-called players to use the free sites. And
okay, yeah, the site I met her on was a kink dating site, and a lot of people would be kind of surprised to learn this, but a lot of people who are kinky are not into playing the field. They're kinky and they're into finding the right person to be the one or the two, or the two. You know, sometimes it's two. Yeah.
That's great. I think a few years ago I suggested to somebody that someone should start like a libertarian dating site.
I tried to start one about 5 years ago, and I didn't really know much about doing databases or anything. You basically need someone that could do database programming to do that correctly. But I had the greatest web address for it. It was, and I had this for a couple of years. It was libertylovescompany.com.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
it's kind of a play on Misery Loves Company. But and, you know, I wanted to clarify something. Back when I was playing in the field and dating a lot of crazy girls, I was pretty nuts, too. I mean, I don't want to say nuts because we're living in an age where if you say you're crazy, they mark it down on a form and, you know, limit your rights. But I was a lot of fun, obviously, because and a lot of these girls were pretty. I mean, this wasn't, you know, they were fine on the outside. Let's put it that way. It was a two-way street. I was incapable of having a relationship, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's totally understandable.
I'm not blaming them.
Yeah.
Because then they'll find me and kill me.
It's that hot, crazy scale.
I know a couple of them listen to me. I look at the IP addresses of the people who look at this site.
Nice. Okay.
I know they're stalking me still.
Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome? I don't know about that.
No. Some yeah. guys love that. They love to know that women are after them. But what?
I don't know. I'm actually still friends with a couple of my ex-girlfriends. Like, one of them was... I said this the other day. One of them was the witness at my wedding with DJ.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. she's not someone who's... That's another thing, too. Like, we trust each other a lot. Like, if she gets an email from a male she knows, or I get an email from a female she knows... I mean, I know men whose wives are so... jealous that they would not let them do a radio show with two different women, you know?
Yeah, that's too much. Definitely yeah. too much. But yeah. there is a point, though, because the last guy I dated definitely hung out with his ex-girlfriend every single day. Mm. It was a little weird, and he happened to live in another state, so...
I think part of the reason that we moved to a different state was to get a fresh break on everything, and that doesn't mean, like... you know, we didn't want our exes contacting us because they can still email us or call us. But that's impossible. I mean, none of our exes live within a 500-mile radius of us or more, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, you also moved to get out of California.
Oh, yeah. That's the main reason.
Yeah. I can't even imagine living in California.
Yeah. It was, you know, our liberty path kind of paralleled each other. It was kind of interesting, though. I came from the left side and she came from the right side. Mm-hmm. As far as voting, like I always voted Democrat and she always voted Republican. She didn't tell me she was Republican until we'd been married a year. And if she told me that, I probably wouldn't have married her.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, she was a small government Republican and we both went to libertarian together and went to, you know, gun owner together and went to full on ANCAP together. And I don't want to say if she were still a strong statist, I'd break up with her, but it'd be really hard. I can't imagine that.
Yeah. Well, I can still remember the very first episodes of Freedom Fiends where Nemo was like convincing you about anarchism.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so. The first episode she was on too. It was, actually the first episode of the Freedom Fiends was the last episode of, Clone the Homeless, I think. And I found it about a year ago and posted it as a Freedom Fiend, as the Lost Freedom Fiends episode. But
yeah, that was pretty funny.
She and I were both kind of arguing for, you know, we need to get the right men in there to fix things kind of thing.
Yeah, and that changes over time. And if you can change with somebody else, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's been a really beautiful journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's weird when statists... you know, like try to pin us down on our arguments. And it's like, I don't really have, I can tell you how everything would work in the absence of government, but I absolutely have no strategy to get there other than just talking on the radio. And I don't, and some would say that's a lame strategy. It's not going to work, but I enjoy doing it. I feel like it does help, but I don't have a strategy, man.
I don't think a lot of people have strategies, but they're also the purists who expect us all to have a strategy, and I don't, you don't.
Yeah, I don't have a strategy, but I liken it to someone in the 1840s who's against slavery, absolutely against slavery, but doesn't have a clue of how to get to no slavery.
Exactly.
That's kind of where I'm at, man. But I know that voting ain't going to do it, and violence ain't going
to
do it.
When the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
If you don't love America, if you don't love America, get out.
Meow!
The problem is, there's really nowhere to go. You can't go anywhere.
Somalia!
Somalia has government.
Yep.
It has government in a bunch of warlords and then a bunch of other warlords that are armed by the U.S. government. Yep. Yeah, that's what happens. So, our redemption in the third act. We were talking about relationships, bad relationships, and the women who love them. And I want to recommend a book I wrote called A User's Manual for the Human Experience. And I'll link it in the show notes tonight, or you can Google that, A User's Manual for the Human Experience. It's a free ebook, free audiobook, or an inexpensive paperback on Amazon. And it's been really useful to a lot of people who've had problems, and I recommended it. I recommend it. Have you read it? You heard it?
I've listened to the audio. Yeah, it's really good.
Cool. It has a blurb from Jason Sorens, the founder of the Free State Project.
Oh, about relationships?
No, about my book. He says this book is part intellectual memoir, part self-help book. Michael Dean's practical emotional self-defense techniques flow from a wealth of life experiences, both positive and negative. The only two rules in life have some radical refreshing implications. Blah, blah, blah,
blah. Nice.
Yep. And one of the only two rules in life that I talk about in that book is the non-aggression principle, and that is do not initiate aggression. And
yeah.
I take it to the non-aggression principle 2.0 in there, which is do not initiate or accept aggression. And I do something that's kind of controversial to a lot of people who live by the non-aggression principle, which is I extend it from physical violence to emotional violence. And I think a lot of people put up with emotional violence regardless. I mean, really, you'd have to because, you know, is it when a cop pulls you over and hassles you for something that shouldn't be a crime and gives you a ticket and you have to pay it or they'll steal your car? There's no physical violence there. There's not even necessarily a outward threat of physical violence, but there is, it is, you know, from experience that it's backed by violence. If you don't pay this ticket, they will come and take your car. And if you fight them, they will point a gun at you. And if you fight them long enough, they will, or more, they'll shoot you. So I think that a lot of people put up with emotional abuse that may not necessarily be backed with the threat of violence, but that is still aggression. In some of the same sense that the aggression principle deals with non-aggression. So,
yeah, but wouldn't the brutalists say that there's no such thing as emotional abuse?
Wouldn't people who say they live by the non-aggression principle and spend their whole life emotionally aggressing on people say they're not aggressing on people? Yeah, probably.
Oh, bingo.
Yeah, although what my book deals with is, you know, people are going to – haters are going to hate. People are going to do what they do, and – so, you know, I think some of the brutalism thing, and I don't really want to get into that, but I've, to answer your question, I think a lot of that is just kind of macho libertarian flash taken to an extreme. And I've always been into the macho libertarian flash. It's macho libertarian flash combined with thin libertarianism of the only thing that matters is the non-aggression principle. Everything else is just, you know, fluffy candle window dressing that you don't need. Mm-hmm. And, I can see their point. I can see the point they're trying to make. But, you know, like Stefan Molyneux said, there's the don't be a Richard principle also, which is not an absolute of life. But I think it is if you want to function around other people. And my whole thing is about not putting up with that, not in the sense of retaliating in any way, but in the sense of leaving them, of people who abuse you, just ignoring them and going away. And yeah, they may still go on the Twitters and the Facebooks and yell at you for a while, but people that are kind of like soul mosquitoes like that, people that really want to suck you out and they get off on it.
Yep.
If you don't feed them anything back, they literally will find someone else to go after.
Exactly.
That's a rule of life, you know?
Totally. I've learned that the hard way though.
Yep. So The User's Manual for the Human Experience, I recommend that book that I wrote. And we talked about the non-aggression principle. It's the opposite of the aggression principle. And the aggression principle is what every government runs by. It's the threat that if you don't do what they say and write down on paper, they will come after you with a gun and put you into a cage. So don't live by the aggression principle. Do try to live by the non-aggression principle. And Google the non-aggression principle. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yep.
Yep. That's all I got. I'll tell my sister's wedding ring story another time when I'm on with Nikki again.
All right.
Thank you for bearing your soul, Nikki. It's been good
Thank
for me.
You.
It's probably good for somebody else, too.
Das Worms.
Das Worms. Worms.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Here we go.
Trumpets.